Fish here. Last week, we started a new series on the book of Ruth in the Old Testament. The book of Ruth is a very small book. It's only four chapters, just a few pages. One of the things I'd encourage you to do when we're doing a book study is take some time and read the book that we're going through. This one is so short. It's actually, the Old Testament is fairly big. It's sizable. It's easy to even, or hard to even find it because you can skip past it. It's only a couple pages, but I'd encourage you to take some time to read this book. There's something that happened here in Ruth, in this book, that has inspired people for thousands of years. And I want to look at that today and look in chapter 2, and I'm going to go back to a few things that happened in chapter 1 because I think it's important to understand the context and the background and what is inspiring about this. So with that, why don't we stop and pray, and we'll ask God to bless our time. God, I thank you that we can look to your word. Thank you that you gave us the scripture and the Bible and the good examples and the bad examples here, that we can learn what it means to follow you, what it means to trust in you. Pray that we learn from you today. Help our hearts to be open to learn to the truth here. Amen. So Greg last week gave us an introduction of the book and a little bit, actually, of the different opinions and different things there. But I want to look specifically at what was happening to this family. Now, when you start a family, if you have aspirations to get married, you have hopes for the future. I'm hoping to build a life. And life here was a little different than it was, than it is now, for sure. You know, it was a much more agrarian society. People farmed, they had flocks of animals, and that was a very common way. There weren't a lot of factories. There weren't any factories that I knew of back then, and away, you know, there were no software companies. And so it was very common. You'd get married, you'd have some land, you'd have some children. The children would grow up and help you work the farm, work the fields. Then that's how you built your little clan of how you survived. And that was normal. So we're going to look back at the situation that was happening here. So there was a couple, Elimelech and Naomi, and they were married, and they had some sons. And so this is what happened. Elimelech, Naomi's husband, died, and she was left with her two sons. This is Ruth chapter 1, verse 3. We're going to do the first couple verses here. And they lived in the area of Moab. And so this next verse refers to the local people there. They married Moabite women, the two sons, one named Orpah and the other named Ruth. And they'd lived there about 10 years. So the husband, Naomi's husband, passed away. The two sons married, and they were all together there in their family, Orpah and Ruth and the two sons. And then this happened. Both Malhan and Kilian, these are the two sons, let's see, also died, and Naomi was left without her two sons and her husband. I don't know if you ever thought about life throws you a curveball. Here's Naomi, her husband passes away, her two sons marry, and Ruth and Orpah, and then they pass away, both sons. So here are these three women. There's no other children mentioned. So here's the situation. Naomi has lost her husband and her two sons, and these three women now share something in common. They've all lost a husband, all three of them, together. We don't know what happened. We don't know the specifics, but this is something that they all share. This is the curveball of life that no one had ever hoped for, no one had ever planned. So they have this little meeting. What do we do? What do we do? We're now three women together trying to make life work. There are no men left to help out. To whatever you plan, it's just us. So they had this meeting. Actually, these verses I don't have up on the screen here. I'm going to just read this. This is the next verse. Ruth tells them to move on. Naomi said to her two daughters-in-law, "Go back each of you to your home. May the Lord show kindness as you have shown kindness to me, to the dead, to your dead husbands and to me." So she's saying, you've honored your dead husband, you've honored me by staying here, but go back home to your families. I cannot provide for you. May the Lord grant each of you will find rest in the home of another husband. She's saying, you two, go start over. Start over, start a new life. Don't stay here with me. They kissed them goodbye and wept aloud. And she said to her, "We will go back to your people." These are the two women saying, "No, no, we'll stay with you. We'll go be with your people. We'll stay with you." They shared this in common, the loss and of a family. And they said, "No, we'll stay with you. Don't tell us to go." But Naomi stands firm. She says, "No, return home, my daughters. Why would you come with me?" They're having this discussion. Now, I'm imagining this is a private conversation. This is a private little meeting. I don't think you called a whole group together and say, "Okay, let's talk." I think this is my opinion. This is a private little meeting. "Why would you come with me? Am I going to have more sons? Who could become your husbands? Return home, my daughters. I'm too old to have another husband. Even if there was hope for me, even if I had a husband tonight and gave birth to two sons." So she's telling them, please move on. She's saying, it's over for me. What I'd hoped for, what I planned for my life, it's all over. Please go back, and I cannot provide for you. Don't stay here with me. This is the mood of these women grieving over this curveball of life. So now we'll pick this up. This verse I have on the screen for you. So she's saying, even if I remarried, even if I had more sons, would you wait until they grew up? Would you remain unmarried for them? No, my daughters. It's more bitter for me than for you because the Lord's hand has turned against me. Why is it more bitter? They've all lost a husband. Naomi has lost her husband and her sons. She's saying, there's nothing here. I cannot provide for you. I cannot protect you. I can't give you anything. Please, I'll survive. Just go on. Start somewhere else. It's modern terms, we're saying it's over. It's over. That's the somber mood in this meeting. That's the way I take it. How do we know it was somber? Actually, the next verse I've got here is 14. "At this they wept aloud. Then Orpah kissed her mother-in-law goodbye, but Ruth clung to her." So Orpah left. She left to go back. She agreed. "I'll go back to my family. I'll go back to my parents. I'll go back to my family of origin. I'll start over with them." "Look," said Naomi. She's talking to Ruth. "Your sister-in-law is going back to her people and her gods. Go back with her. Go back with her. So they cried. Orpah left. Ruth is clinging to Naomi in this moment of saying goodbye. And Naomi goes, see, she's leaving. Just go. Just go. It's over. Now this next verse, this next two verses, this is one of the most famous parts of this book. Verses 16 and 17. Honest, this has inspired people for thousands of years. These next two verses. And I was thinking about what's inspiring about these next two verses in Ruth. What is it? Is it the words? But something happened here that is unusual, that involves commitment and friendship and unusual faithfulness. So Naomi's going, go. And Naomi is alone now. She's lost her husband and her two sons, and she's telling these other women, just go. And this is what Ruth says. This is what she says to her. This is the response. Don't urge me to leave you or turn back from you. Don't urge me to do that. Where you go, I will go. Where you stay, I will stay. Your people will be my people, and your God will be my God. Where you die, and there I will be buried. May the Lord deal with me, be it ever so severely, if even death separates you and me. I have a hard time reading. This is a beautiful statement. It's a beautiful moment. Everyone has left. Naomi has lost everything she holds most dear. She's lost everything she holds most dear, and she's telling the people, other, out of concern for them, I cannot provide for you. Please go on and build your own life. My life is over. And Ruth says, no. I will not leave you. Everyone else is gone. I will not leave you. I will not forsake you. We will do this together. From a worldly point of view, this doesn't make a lot of sense. Why would you do this? There's not a lot of hope here. Two women are going to forge a life in this time together. Whatever it means, I will stay with you. She is the one person. I will not let you go forward alone. I don't think it's the words. What inspires us here? What is inspiring? I think we see God's character. There are sometimes people do things and we see the character of God shine through in commitment and faithfulness and loyalty. And when we see that, that's what's represented by these words here. We go, wow, what is that? Where you die, I will die. I will not leave you. That's a beautiful. There I will be buried with you. You will not be alone. Naomi was totally alone. Had no one. And Ruth said, I will not leave you. I will not do that to you. I am committed to you. However it works, whatever happens, good or bad, I will walk with you. I will not force you to walk alone. So, what do you think happened? We're still in chapter 1. I'm supposed to talk about chapter 2. They agree. This is how they agree. When Naomi realized that Ruth was determined to go with her, she stopped. So she's okay. I'm not talking her out of this. So these two women are going to forge a new life together somehow. Somehow. I don't think Naomi has a lot of hope. And Ruth says, I will go with you. We will work this out. Okay. That's the background. I think it's important to understand the background of what they were facing together. So now, chapter 2. Chapter 2. Oops, I'm a little ahead of myself here. I'm going to read the verse before this. Let's see. There we go. Now Naomi had a relative on her husband's side, a man of standing from the clan of Elimelech, that means they were related, whose name was Boaz. And Ruth, the Moabite, said to Naomi, they're just having this conversation, let me go into the fields, pick up the leftover grain behind anyone in whose eyes I find favor. So these two women have to make a life. They have to provide for themselves. And she goes, I'm going to go out and I'm going to try to gather food for us and I'm going to see if anyone will help us. I'm going to go out and I'm going to see if anyone will shine some favor on us. We don't really know anyone here. It's a new place. They moved. It's a new place for them. They don't have no real connections. They're starting over, these two women. Next verse, or same verse. So Naomi said to her, go ahead. She went out. This is Ruth. Entered a field and began to glean and gather behind the harvesters. As it turned out, just by chance, things happen by chance, right? In a field belonging to Boaz, who was from the clan of Elimelech. This means that Boaz is related, they're relatives, to Naomi. So, you see, God will use circumstances and chances. I believe in chance. I had a guy send me an email. I met a guy by chance, and we're supposed to have lunch this week. And I said, hey, we should get together and talk. He says, yeah, I don't believe that things happen by chance. And I said, I agree. So let's get together. And he's going to buy me lunch, I think. Which is good, because I like lunch. So this is Boaz's field. It's his operation. He's, how they make their living. He has crops. He has people working for him. Boaz goes out to the field. Boaz, the overseer of the harvesters, notices her. She's behind all the other workers. Who does that young woman belong to? That young woman. He notices her. Who's that young woman? The overseer replied, she is the Moabite who came back from Moab with Naomi. And this is this foreman, whoever, who's answering him. He explains what happens. She said, please let me gather among the sheaves and behind the harvesters. And she came in the field and has remained here from morning until now, except for a short rest in the shelter. So this is interesting. She says, hey, can I gather in your field? She went to the workers. She's doing her own work. She's not asking for a handout, but she says, can I gather here? And the guy says, she's working hard. She's out here. She had one rest, but she's been working all morning. So what's the guy's name? Boaz, thank you. 7 years of college, down the drain. let's see. No, I'm totally lost. Oh, here it is. So Boaz notices her and goes up to talk to her. Look what he says here. Goes up and talks to her. So Boaz just learned who she was from one of the guys working in the field. Boaz says to Ruth, my daughter, listen, don't go and glean in another field. He's saying, stay here. Stay here. Don't go away. Stay here with the women who work for me. Watch the field where the men are harvesting and follow along after these women. I've told the men not to lay a hand on you. Whenever you're thirsty, get a drink from the water jars the men have filled. So what he's saying is, this is important. He's saying, okay, he's talking to his workmen. He talked to, okay, she's here. She's helping to support her relative. She's committed to her. We're going to help her. No one bother her. As a matter of fact, you provide for her. He's told his people that. And he tells her, you stay here with us. It'll be safe for you here. He communicates this to her. You know, he didn't have to do this. He could have said, this is my field, this is my grain. This is for my people. You're some foreigner who just moved into town. Go somewhere else. He could have done that. He didn't. He said, come under my tent. We're going to help you out. And he told his people that. And he sent that message, no one bother her, everyone respect her and help her. So they're having this conversation. This is what she says. At this, she bowed down with her face to the ground. Why have I found such favor in your eyes that you would notice me? She's saying, this is unusual. Why do I have favor with you? Why? Ever wonder why people do things? Boaz answers her. This is an amazing conversation. Boaz replied, I've been told all about what you have done for your mother-in-law. But remember this conversation when Ruth committed herself, that in my opinion was probably a private conversation before they arrived in this land? Before they moved, before they were here, when Ruth and Orpah talked, and Naomi said, go back home. Go home. Go away. It's over. Go back home. I cannot provide for you. And Naomi committed herself in verses 16 and 17 and said, I will go with you. I will die where you die. I will stay with you. Somehow, Boaz heard about this. He wasn't there. He says, I've heard about this. However it happened, someone talked about it. It affected people's lives, this type of commitment, this type of friendship, where somebody talked, and Boaz knows. And Ruth is going, why are you doing this? Why are you helping us? And Boaz says, I'm helping you because you helped someone else, because of your faithfulness and your commitment. He says, I've been told about what you've done for your mother-in-law since the death of your husband, how you helped your father and mother in your homeland and came to live with a people you did not know. Look what he says next. May the Lord repay you for what you have done. May you be richly rewarded by the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to take refuge. What he's saying is, you have done a great thing. You've done an unusual thing. You have helped someone who was helpless, who lost all hope for the future. You have done that. And he's saying, God, you've taken refuge in God. And he doesn't say this in words. He says, God is going to help you. And God is going to help you through me. That's what he's doing. He's using everything God has given him, his field, his workers, the men and women who work for him. And he's saying, God is going to help you through me. And he is providing for her. Ever wonder if some of those sacrifices you make are ever noticed? Some of the commitments that fade into the background, if they're ever noticed, if anyone ever notices, or if you do them for nothing, Boaz noticed. Ruth's commitment and her sacrifice to go wherever this went, Boaz noticed. God noticed. And Boaz says, we're going to help you. He steps in to be the one that God uses to help this family. This is what Ruth says next. May I continue to find favor in your eyes. You have put me at ease by speaking kindly to your servant. Why was this helpful for Ruth? Before this, it was just Ruth and Naomi trying to forge a new life. Remember, they said, let me go out and see if I can find someone who will help us because we can't make it alone. We can't do this alone. We need help. We don't have the normal things we need. We don't have a whole family clan to work. We need help. And she sees that God is providing for them. And she now has some hope. Someone is going to help us. She now has some encouragement. This puts her at ease. So she takes all that she gathers and she goes back home. Now, I'm not exactly sure how this worked, but Boaz sent the message to his workers to leave her some grain. And I don't know how much she could carry or how much she brought back, but this is how I envision this. So say it's all she can carry. She's weighted down with all this. Maybe she had to have someone help her carry it home. I don't know. This is what happens next in verse 2:19. This is what Naomi says. Where did you glean today? Where did you work? Blessed be the man who took notice of you. If you came back with nothing, you wouldn't say this. My guess is she came back with a lot of stuff. Maybe all she could carry. Maybe more than she could carry. Because Naomi's going, where did you go? Someone must have helped you. Bless the person who took notice of you. Bless them. Then Ruth told her mother-in-law about the one at whose place she had been working. The man his name was Boaz. I worked for Boaz. This is what Naomi says next. The Lord bless him, Naomi said to her daughter-in-law. He has not stopped showing kindness to the living and the dead. What she's saying is he's a relative. He's honoring our family. Our husbands, my sons, he's honoring us and he's honoring them and he's helping us. She added, that man is a close relative. He is one of our guardian redeemers. This is a phrase we are not familiar with. Guardian redeemers. This was written into the Levitical law when there was hardship in a family. In an Israelite family, they were supposed to care for each other, to go out of their way to care for each other. And so a guardian redeemer, it's kind of an unusual phrase. We'll look at this just for a minute. Some translations will say kinsman redeemer. Others will say family redeemer, but the meaning is the same. Guardian redeemer, kinsman redeemer, family redeemer. What does it mean? It was written into the law that when tragedy happens into a family, the family has to take care of each other. And Boaz saw the need and saw the faithfulness of Ruth and said, this is when I do this, and I'm going to really step in and do this. He didn't do it because it was the law. He did this with his heart. You can tell by the way it works, by how much emphasis he puts in here. A redeemer. This is a picture of God and us. God and the Israelites, God and us. Everyone needs a redeemer. It's interesting the difference between Ruth and Naomi. Naomi was looking for this is one of our guardian redeemers. He will help us. We need help. Ruth didn't know exactly how this. She wasn't an Israelite. How does this work? Maybe someone will help us. I'll find someone. Maybe we'll find some help. But they both knew they needed help. This is what a redeemer does. Does the work that you cannot do. It's a picture of our lives with God. The ultimate redeemer is obviously Jesus Christ. This is a picture of what God would do later for all of us. And it's a practical example of friendship, commitment, faithfulness. A beautiful example, really. So, I am actually going to stop here at this part of our service because this is a breaking of bread Sunday. And it's actually a good place to stop because we're going to stop and recognize God's sacrifice for us. Just like they needed someone to help them in what they couldn't do for themselves, we need someone to provide for our sin. And that's what Christ did for us. So I'm going to have the music team come back up and lead us in worship. I'll pray while they're coming up, and we're going to break bread together.